This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Thanks for listening to No Joke with Billy and Adam on the HeadGum Podcast Network. This is the show where we tackle a topic oh so loosely and discuss our previous, present, and future relationship to it.
Today's topic was Asia. We hope you enjoy the No Joke Podcast. Welcome back. This is the No Joke Podcast. I am Billy Scafiore.
I'm Adam Lustig.
And this is a special episode, Adam, because what the listeners may not know is that despite us putting out three episodes in the past 3 weeks.
Like clockwork, every Shabbos.
You were not here.
No.
The ghost of Adam was actually here.
Yes, that wasn't me. That was the Billy and the ghost of Adam recording those last four podcasts.
Because you weren't in America.
No, no, no. My lovely girlfriend, Maggie, and I have been in Asia for the past 3 weeks.
Boom.
Boom.
Asia.
Let that settle in, audience. A different place.
Three quarters of that word are vowels.
Yeah, exactly. Does Asia come up a lot in crossword puzzles? Probably too obvious.
Yes, it does.
Does it really?
And you know what else does? Aria. An opera singer solo.
They love those vowels.
Love those vowels.
And you do a lot of crossword puzzles, Bill.
I do.
This is one of your meditative, relaxing, self-soothing tactics.
And this is a little tip.
Puzzle.
This is a little tip for any crossword heads out there. If you think it's one word or you think it's the other and both fit and you don't really have any clues to get you there, you just kind of choose one.
Yes.
Choose the one with more vowels.
Vowels always default to more vowels.
That's what the crossword puzzle wants. It feeds on vowels.
Vowels are the precious minerals around which the crossword puzzle ecosystem can exist.
Correct.
Yes.
It's like another popular one is, it's not sword fighting. Not jousting. What is fencing?
Fencing.
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 So you think it might be the rapier.
Rapier. Rapier.
R-A-P-I-E-R.
Correct.
But they call it an epi. E-P-E-E.
Oh. Epi? That is nothing but vowels.
And so there's some
three
words that you'll never use.
Three of the four letters are E's.
Yes.
Jesus.
So there's some words you'll never use in conversation.
Yes.
But you do need to know them exclusively.
When you're interacting with Will Shortz from the New York Times.
Right.
Maggie's grandmother, who was a movie star back in the day, her name is Elena Verdugo, is frequently a crossword puzzle clue.
Because I filled her in.
Yeah. Elena, her first name, many, many vowels.
Wow.
Yeah. So she is repped pretty heavy in crossword puzzles, mainly because her first name is vowel heavy.
What do you think we would have to do to get in a crossword? No joke has almost every other letter is a vowel.
So that literally every other letter is a vowel.
Will,
so,
Mr. Shorts.
Paging Mr. Shorts, please include us in your crossword fun.
What would you say a good clue for the answer to be no joke?
Oh, okay. That's good. Okay. Let me think. The crossword puzzle. Now, you're pretty well versed in how crossword puzzle clues are phrased.
Well, I'm better versed in how they're answered.
Yeah.
So,
Bantery Buds Radio Show.
Okay. Buds Radio Show.
That's not quite it. That wouldn't really get you. That could be. That literally describes 96% of podcasts.
But that's the right voice. That's the right fun.
Yeah, I feel like there's some alliteration in the clues sometimes.
Right.
Some fun with that.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Maybe we come back in the second act. We give ourselves a little time to marinate.
Yes, and please, audience, please submit whatever you think the crossword puzzle clue that would warrant the response, no joke, what that might be.
And if you have nothing but time, maybe create a crossword puzzle where every single little clue is related to the first 67 episodes of this The No Joke Podcast.
An intense project for which we would have to give you extra credit.
You get an A.
You'd get an A.
You've got the A.
You've got it already.
If you're even just picking up a pen right now, we've already graded you A+. Yeah.
I think to get my personal name in there, I might just want to tack on five extra A's at the beginning. So I'd be like, ah.
Kind of like double A Hong Kong MCO.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Is that national? Double A Hong Kong MCO.
AMCO. I think that's car insurance I think that's natural. Well, Larry David certainly made a joke about it in an episode of Curb Enthusiasm. Me think it's in the zeitgeist.
Right. It's like kids named Aaron. They were always going to be number one in class, or they would be first in attendance if you were going by first name.
Aardvark, first in the dictionary.
That's right.
Double A.
That's right.
Asia, spelt with just the one A at the beginning.
Bookends.
Bookends with the A.
Yep.
It was a wonderful trip. And to be honest, we only got back a couple of days ago. I was telling you just before we started recording that my sleep has been freaky deaky on the dance floor.
And you're usually a very good sleeper.
like clockwork, honestly.
Yeah.
But this particular coming back from, we flew from Tokyo the other day. Honestly, I think it was 2 days ago. Could have been seven or could have been zero.
Got it. You haven't been sleeping.
A little bit how I feel.
Right.
But this trip from Tokyo back home this time, the jet lag has really fussed with me a little bit in a way that I don't know if it has.
Jet lag's a very powerful drug.
Yes.
Very powerful drug.
Yeah. And you, I feel like you, when you guys went to the Middle East, like you have a jet lag, but I feel like you have you recover pretty quickly.
That's kind. From jet lag. That's kind, but I'm just like you. I don't know if there's defeating. I think that Mamrie once suggested, when she was on the show, that the way to defeat jet lag is to drink.
It's to drink. Yeah.
Just to drink and tell your body, it's nighttime now. We're going to get drunk and you're going to have a big drunk sleep and you're going to wake up 8 hours.
I got to tell you, that actually sounds totally reasonable. The dude that was sitting next to us on the flight from Tokyo to here, the flight left at, 5:30 Tokyo time, which was like butt crack in the morning, LA time the day before. I mean, it gets crazy.
Okay.
But that dude was just pounding beers on the plane.
Right.
Pounding beer and didn't really doze off as a result, but just got nice and soused.
Yeah.
On the plane.
I think that's an alcoholic.
I thought, maybe that's called an alcoholic. But to Mamrie's point, by the time he got to L.A., he was ready for nap time.
Right.
In a way that I am now envious of.
Right. I mean, people take sleeping pills and stuff on flights to try and just make it all a race. What did you do on your flight there? Did you have a bunch of podcasts lined up?
Yeah, a bunch of podcasts.
Did you? So you downloaded a bunch of podcasts in advance.
Yes, a really excellent podcast, not to plug another podcast on our podcast.
Plug.
Okay. My friend Ian Abramson, our dear friend Ian Abramson, turned me on to this podcast called Presidential. That was a Washington Post podcast that was all of last year leading up to the election. But it was every episode is a new profile of a president.
Okay.
So it's just every president and kind of learning about them as they go along. So that was nice.
That's directly in relation to last week's episode about learning.
That's right. Exactly.
Where we said a good way to learn is by starting new podcasts.
Podcasts are the new books or the new radio podcast is life.
Yeah. We even had some listeners who emailed us or hit us up on Instagram or Twitter something and said, your episode has encouraged me to download educational podcasts.
That is really, I am so happy about that.
That's
I'm proud of that. I, in real life, ran into Baron Vaughn this morning and he said what a fun time he had, and I passed along those good words and he was also grateful.
Good.
So that feedback loop is completed.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So it's 3 weeks ago.
It's 3 weeks
and
ago.
And you're driving to LAX to fly to Tokyo for a few days.
Yeah.
You have your bags packed.
I got our bags packed. Maggie
you have your
and
podcast
I,
download.
A podcast downloaded. We're very vigilant and virulent about no check baggage ever, only carry-ons.
Interesting.
We're not trying to check a bag. Way too many variables. You're asking for trouble in
my
personal
opinion. Is that a trust
opinion.
Thing? You don't trust that your bag will get there, or you just want to have your personal belongings on you at all times?
A little
times?
Bit of both.
Okay.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, the trust thing makes me sound cynical about the airlines and things get lost, but I am sort of a Murphy's Law kind of guy, mm-hmm. and it's if there's a chance that something can get messed up, it will happen to us.
Yes.
I'm just that sort of pessimistic
and
person.
And specifically to you.
Yeah. Yes. I am the klutz that invites Murphy's Law.
Yes. It's you and I both kind of are victims of the fact that weird things happen to weird people. It just happens to us.
Just does.
Right. So.
It is going to. If someone's going to get their passport mixed up with an infant, it's going to be me. And
right.
It's just that will happen somehow.
Just to go off topic for one quick moment, I remember a time where you and I had to fly somewhere. That place was to Burning Man.
Okay.
And we did check our luggage. Mm-hmm. And I should say that Clayton and I checked our luggage and you checked your garbage bag. And that's not me trying to make a point.
It's not even hyperbole.
Fact. You duct taped a garbage bag.
Whoopsie.
That makes you a garbage man.
Garbage man.
But not the paid public service garbage man. A garbage man.
A garbage carrying man.
Yes.
But who's not doing it for money, who's doing it for leisure.
Right.
He carries his personal goods as though they're garbage.
Clayton was ashamed.
Clayton is ashamed. Well, Clayton's also the classiest J.Crew you've ever met, so he probably had a hand-sewn Guatemalan purse.
Right. Okay. So you guys have your bags packed.
Yes. We have our bags packed.
They're definitely not getting checked.
Not getting checked.
What are you – how long is the flight from L.A. to
The flight from L.A. to Tokyo is 12 hours.
So
11 or 12 hours. Something
that is – even if you have a good night's sleep on the flight, there's still time to kill. So did you sleep on the flight? What do you do to past 12 hours?
Yeah, I dozed in and out. I'm a pretty good plane sleeper. In transit, I tend to get rocked like an infant.
Okay.
To sleep, so that kind of helps me.
Preference of the aisle or the window?
No, I don't really have a preference. I'm pretty good. I'm good across the board, to be honest with you.
So you're the guy who gets shoved in the middle because you're ambivalent.
100% of the time.
Right.
100% of the time, every time.
If a stranger comes up to you and says, hey, do you want to sit in the middle? You'll say, yes.
No doubt. Of course. Yeah. If I'm in the window, I'm obviously doing the lean against for the window. If the aisle, it's nice to extend the leg, which someone will inevitably trip over, no doubt.
And the soda cart will whack your knee.
100%.
I have a specific dent in my left knee from years of flying.
The soda cart scar.
The inch.
Yeah.
Right.
I was kind of squinched in the middle, but I don't mind it.
Like we established, you don't mind it.
Established. On these 12-hour flights, and this is something that obviously doesn't really happen in domestic airlines, you get fed. It's like, it was like back to the days of getting meals on planes.
Warm meals, like an ice cream break.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
International flight is nice like
it
that.
It is kind of nice. And we flew Japan Air, which was super nice. It was really, really nice. Like we did a little bit of research, best economy class, and it was like plenty of leg room. I know this is like, this is a podcast about airplanes now.
Okay.
But it was really, really
the
nice.
The type of thing where people dress nice on the flight, or is it still like Tampa to Orlando pajamas?
Tampa to Orlando pajamas.
Got it.
But just for 12 hours.
Got it.
But that is something that I would like to say. Okay, so that's a nice bridge too. So we get to Tokyo. And I just want to say that never having been to Asia, this is my first time. Maggie and I have been to South America. I've been to Europe. You and I have traveled about the United States.
But this is a whole new corner of the world.
A whole new ball game.
Yep.
Literally a new hemisphere.
You've never been here.
Never been here before. Tokyo, I can't stop thinking about it. It's an amazing city.
Yes.
That is I think like the quippiest, I don't know, like most reductive and insulting way I could describe it was that it's like alternate universe New York, in that it's like, or Paris, and that it's this incredibly densely populated, fully vibrant, full of youth and culture and activity and like endlessly stimulating city.
That sounds like New York.
Okay. But spotless and perfect and works like clockwork.
Got it.
No garbage, no garbage cans.
Got it.
Like, literally.
Where does the garbage go?
Exactly.
Does it float?
Does it even exist in the first place?
Is you know there what I mean? Garbage in Tokyo?
Exactly.
Okay.
It doesn't really appear to be so.
You spent time there. Did you, like, eat a candy bar and then suddenly the wrapper just disappeared from your hands?
It felt like that. It felt like it just kind of dissolves. The taxi, you said, like, do people still dress up nice? In Tokyo, the taxi drivers wear black suits, white shirt, black. These are just, like, the city metropolitan taxi drivers.
Yeah, this is just protocol.
Protocol. Black suit. White shirt, black tie, white driving gloves.
Whoa.
White driving gloves.
Got to keep the wheel clean.
The vehicles themselves are like gorgeous, like what we would call sort of like vintage retro. Not like a Bentley, but like feels like that, like a nice car.
Right.
When you get up to the car, the back door opens automatically and silently. Every cab. That's the default cab.
I've been told that Tokyo is the most efficient city in the world.
It feels like the most efficient place on earth. It really does feel that way.
The trains run on time.
Like clockwork.
What the city says it does, it does.
It
does. Simple as that.
And it does perfectly, and it does quietly, and with the utmost respect.
Right. Because in New York, there, if you are waiting for a subway after 1 a.m., it could be 3:15 in the morning, and you could be covered in rats, and you're just still waiting.
And that's on you. And that's on you. And if you didn't expect that, that's on you.
That's like, part of the city's rules.
That's how it works.
We may not be that efficient.
It works in that it doesn't always work exactly.
Right.
That's part of New York. And frankly, most cities. And that's how I thought most cities were. It's like there is a margin of error.
In Tokyo,
there just didn't seem to be any error.
Now, that is like that feels like idyllic. Like, I'd want every city to kind of run like that. Now, is there something a little, like, eerie about how perfect this place seems?
There is, like, a Black Mirror element to it where it's, like, it feels like it's a little bit from the future, you know? Because also, like thrown into the – I mean, it's amazing because – well, first of all, like, everyone seems impeccably dressed and just, like, incredibly fashionable and stylish.
Yes.
Like we said, the museums are incredible. The culture is vibrant. The trains are amazing. It's also like a walking city, so you can get around that way.
Oh, that's nice.
Everything about it is just, I mean, I cannot speak more highly of it. There are like these few little surreal elements, and maybe for people who have been to Asia, this is going to sound very elementary observationally. Everyone wears those breathing masks.
Yeah.
To like protect from the over
avian bird flu?
Or just like general population, like there's so many, many people that it's almost just like protecting from each other's germs.
Got it.
Kind of thing.
That was one of the things that when that started culturally seeping into New York City, and you would just see more and more kind of Asian Americans wearing masks over their mouth. That was one of the few times where I saw it and I said, I'm not scared of what they're scared of.
Yeah.
In that it was like, if you were told that like a plague was happening in New York City, you'd probably take every precaution you possibly could. But I was never felt inclined to be like, I should probably start wearing a surgical mask on the subway.
Just like preemptive strike, like just in case every day there might be an outbreak.
Yeah.
But to me, and I gather that it's not about like, exactly. So for us in the West, and we see that there's something other and weird about it. And we're like, are you prepping for a doomsday?
Right.
But over there, it's just like, no, like we all have germs.
It's the most efficient way.
Yeah, like we all have to, I don't want to get sick. Do you want to get sick?
Right. We're already covered in fumes from industrialized America.
Yeah, exactly.
We're the walking dead. We don't need your little mask. Right.
That's like being sick.
It's all we know.
It's part of it. Yeah. So there was that element to it. There's also another sort of funny wrinkle about Tokyo that was like the same but different, was that skyscrapers everywhere, so many skyscrapers, amazing skyscrapers, huge digital LED screens.
Yep.
Like the flavors of crazy Japanese hyper anime.
The future.
the future. So right. It does feel like Back to the Future alternate 1985 version of like screens in the air, holograms exist. But the funny thing about Tokyo, the funny wrinkle about Tokyo is that like there'll be this huge skyscraper and like levels, like floors 1 through 4 will be a mall. Floor 5 will be apartments. Floor 6 is a bank.
Oh,
there's a karaoke.
It's like a city. It's a city just going up.
That's right.
It's like a little community going up.
Yeah. Like each skyscraper is like almost its own city ecosystem in and of itself. There's a karaoke bar on 11. There's a sushi bar on 13. And there's an observatory on 16 and maybe some more apartments on 18.
In a word, that's efficient.
It's efficient as hell.
Right.
Tokyo was so rad, Billy. It was so cool. And they're prepping for the 2020 Olympics.
Do they have it?
The 2020 Summer Olympics are going to be in Tokyo. So there's like some signage and there's a lot of construction.
Yeah.
And one of the things about Tokyo, because Japan is literally in the middle of the ocean and relatively geographically isolated.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, I don't know what the demographics are, but it feels not homogeneous, but like less innately diverse than, say, big American city.
It's isolated.
Fairly isolated. So I think that like the Olympics are an effort, like gearing up for the Olympics. They're trying to go out of their way to make Tokyo, quote, more and more international.
Cool.
So there's whatever.
We'll see how
but
it,
it was fantastic.
Very good. Yeah. Let's go to the first act break.
Let's do it.
We'll do a quick ad and we'll come back and revisit Asia.
Great. Thank you to Blue Apron for being one of the sponsors of the No Joke podcast. Blue Apron, a service I use with constant regularity, is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the United States. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even dopey podcast hosts like us.
Yes.
It achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs.
Yep. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. As a result, seafood is sourced sustainably, beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised farms, and produce is basically sourced from all over the country but local to you.
Some of the featured meals that Blue Apron is sending out these days is spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salad.
That's good.
Thank you.
Good, good, good.
There's a sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice.
Yep.
Nice.
There's baby broccoli and fontina, my favorite word, paninis.
Oh, the panini.
Gotta get yourself a panini when it's available.
Yep.
Baby broccoli and fontina panini with hard-boiled egg and arugula salad.
And also a Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli.
Yeah.
All super delicious.
Yeah, all super delicious and all super affordable.
Yes.
For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers all the seasonal recipes and ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals.
So if you go to blueapron.com/nojoke, enter the offer code nojoke, you will get your first 3 meals free, and that includes free shipping, which is rad.
Yes. So once again, that is blueapron.com/nojoke. Once again, blueapron.com/nojoke. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook.
We're back. This is Act 2 of the No Joke podcast. Today, we were kind of discussing Asia because that's where I just was.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the act break, you and I were talking about one of the qualities of Tokyo is that it's very quiet.
Relatively quiet.
That's not something that we are.
Not even in the least.
A challenge.
A huge challenge. We stuck out like 2 loud American thumbs.
Yes. 2 black and blue thumbs.
2 black and blue thumbs screaming at the top of their lungs. Just speaking at my art, Maggie and I, who have the, pardon me, natural proclivity to speak loudly regardless.
Yes.
So even by American standards, we're loud people.
Yes.
By Japanese standards, we are car alarms. We are walking car alarms.
You said that you would stand on a city corner and there was a hush.
Yeah. Oh,
is
yeah.
Okay. It's just quiet?
Yeah. So like we stayed in a neighborhood called Shibuya and Harajuku, which are like the cool, there's a lot of activity. Shibuya Crossing is like the thing that you see in the Tokyo postcards where it's like this crazy 5-way intersection and every corner is packed with people.
Okay.
Huge Times Square-ish LED screens everywhere. So at Shibuya Crossing, we were there a couple of times just sort of walking around the neighborhood. And you'll be there and there'll be, I don't know, dozens to hundreds of people around in your purview just like at this intersection.
Right.
And there's like barely a din.
Right.
Just like some chit-chat.
Because everyone speaking voices is just very low.
Just reserved and just polite and just speaking to the person next to them, not making a scene.
Don't over-speaking, not over-animated.
Didn't see one vagrant. Didn't see a single homeless person.
Now
didn't see one crazy person acting weird on the street.
Now that's hard to fathom.
Exactly.
That kind of plays into my conspiracy theory.
Dystopia
that something's
almost.
Happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the wrapper or like the piece of garbage that just like disappears.
Where is your refuse?
Right.
Either physical or human.
Right.
Like, where is your bad things?
That's so odd.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there it was like a deliberate absence of disruption.
Yeah.
There was a deliberate absence of disruption.
That's a good way of
putting
it.
No one was so Maggie and I, small example, maybe she'll be embarrassed me telling this, but I don't think so. We went to go see the King Kong movie the very last night that we were there.
In Japan.
So we started in Tokyo for a weekend, and then we went to Thailand and Cambodia for a few weeks.
Sure.
Ended our trip with a weekend in Tokyo. And our very, very last night, we're like, we're tired and we're travel weary. We're anticipating coming home. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Let's just like go to the movies,
yes,
you know, to like
course.
Do something a little normal, a normal cultural experience, but in this weird context. So we went to see King Kong, which is rad, in this huge, gorgeous 3D IMAX, whatever, Tokyo theater. And there were some funny parts in it. John C. Reilly's in the movie. He's really funny. And just like we laughed at some of the funny parts. And we didn't laugh particularly loudly, just laughed at a part in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Shushed. A man turned to us and said, shush.
Whoa.
Shushed.
No fun.
No, I mean, it was just like, we were just the loudest people in the nation. for the days that we were there, we felt like we were the loudest people there.
This is my question. Did you turn it down when you were there? Did you say we have to actively be quieter?
I mean, I don't think it was like an explicit thing, but we just sort of like, you know, you read the room.
Of course. And you read the room. I'm just curious. I was going to ask, did you quiet yourselves down and did you like it?
I think that...
Because that's like something you and Maggie in particular need an outside force. I'm not saying you need it.
No,
force,
but
I'm saying you would require one to, you know, to
big
change
time.
Any aspect of yourself, specifically
of
your speaking volume.
Especially if it's just the two of us bouncing around being loud with each other. It's
and
like,
so
how are we supposed
culturally,
to know
we speak quiet here.
Exactly.
I'm curious if you guys did and if it was nice.
I mean, you just sort of innately adapt. I feel like maybe, I wonder what Maggie would say about this, but I feel like we just innately kind of adapted and
yeah,
all
right.
of a sudden we were Japanese a little.
That makes sense.
And, yeah, it was just like down here.
Sure.
But we're also going to like Yoyogi Park, which is this really amazing park that was right in Shibuya that we went to. And in the park is this huge, one of these ancient Japanese shrines. So like a lot of the landmarks that you're going to around Asia, particularly Thailand, are like these sacred Buddhist temples.
Yeah.
So like
inherently peaceful, quiet. It just turns you down.
It just dials you down in a very kind of peaceful,
nice.
Meditative way.
Right.
It would be crazy and a little weird to like be at a temple being like, wow, look at this freaking temple.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's like the American like traveler in a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Look at this freaking temple.
Like, now, how old is this?
Right.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So Tokyo, you spent just like a weekend there.
We were there for two, three days up top.
Because the larger chunk of your trip was going to happen where?
Was going to happen in Thailand.
In Thailand.
Yeah.
Now, why Thailand in particular? What about Thailand excited you and Maggie to say, let's go there?
It feels really exotic, mm-hmm. and we have actually been wanting to go there for 7 years.
Really?
Or so. And we had a trip planned a couple years ago, maybe 2011 or 10. And it was right and then there was a tsunami that happened in Thailand.
Oh,
and
my
like
gosh,
wrecked,
of course.
It got wrecked and it was really catastrophic and awful. So we didn't end up going then. But we've always sort of had it in our mind to go to Southeast Asia. It just seems like a rad place. And many of our collective friends, Dan and Kelly went there for their honeymoon. Lucas and Aubrey have been there.
I feel so interesting.
Many, many friends have gone there and have reported back that it's lovely. David Brundage made a movie in Cambodia and like fell in love with Southeast Asia.
Fascinating.
And I just feel like it's one of the rad places. It's
yeah,
just
sure.
a beautiful place of Earth.
Got it. So you get to Cambodia. Oh, you get to Cambodia first?
Thailand first. So we flew from Tokyo to Bangkok.
Okay.
And Bangkok, and this was an amazing contrast in cities. Tokyo, super orderly, incredibly buttoned up, not a hair or piece of trash out of place anywhere.
Does that set your expectation for the rest of the trip?
It was just like the overwhelming sensory experience of Tokyo was how flawless it seemed.
Organized.
So organized and perfect.
Cool.
Bangkok, oh baby.
Go on.
Not so.
Okay.
The opposite.
You land in Bangkok.
Okay, so we land in Bangkok. And one of the things that was like an interesting cultural note about Thailand was that the king passed away last October, in October 2016, and the nation mourns for a year. And like they take that
without replacing.
The king is replaced, I think, by his heir.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
And concurrently, they mourn. And this king was like super beloved, mm-hmm. apparently, I
mm-hmm.
gather.
Mm-hmm.
So they're mourning the king for a year. There's black bunting everywhere, like a sad World Series.
Oh.
Like all the buildings have like black bunting.
Oh, I've never heard bunting before.
Bunting, yeah.
I
think that's what that's called. Like the red, white, and blue flags
yeah,
that hang
yeah.
from the.
Like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Bunting. So there's like black bunting and people are wearing black pins. Some people are just straight up dressed all, just like people, civilians in the world in Bangkok and in the villages just are wearing all black.
Wow. Wow.
They're literally in mourning for their king. And so that was just a cultural umbrella that was existed while we were there. It was interesting.
Did it feel sad? Not at all. Okay, got it. People went on with their lives, but it was out of respect.
Because at this point, it's March.
Right.
It's not 9 months later.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is it pageantry where it's like we have to keep putting up this sad act? Or if it's like we could still recognize that he's gone and
I think it was 50-50 because like again, huge billboards in memory of our wonderful king.
Okay.
Like pictures of him everywhere as a strapping young man helping the poor, as an old man doing that.
Cool.
Just like constant.
Into it.
Totally into it. Before every flight in Thailand, intra-Thailand, they took a little moment of silence and all the flight attendants would bow their head and it was a serious moment. Everywhere. It was just like constantly being addressed in small, ingrained ways.
Okay.
Not calling too much attention to it. But anyway, speaking to its raggedness. So we land at the airport. We run out, and I've described the Tokyo taxis. We run out to get a taxi from the airport, and it is – and you've been to Morocco.
Yes.
And I know that you talk about this sort of like –
it was shocking.
The merchant economy. People are constantly trying to get your – and you, I remember you telling a story about people who just put a snake on you, and
yes.
then you have to pay them to take it off.
That was the worst.
Okay. So like similar – the closer – Bangkok is closer to that than Tokyo.
That's intense.
Yeah.
how do you react to that?
Yeah,
so I didn't react well to that.
Yeah. I mean it just – again, it took some adapting. For me, Maggie adapted much quicker than I did.
Okay.
I was just like my kind of like New York hackles got raised.
Exactly. Two fists in your pocket and you're just defensive.
Just ready. Defensive.
It's
and
more
for better
of an
or worse.
Adventure than a vacation.
Yes,
that's how I describe my trip to Morocco. It was an adventure, not a vacation.
Yes.
I was like on alert the whole time.
Yes.
Maybe it was just the dumb American in me, but it was just like how my body reacted to being in a strange place.
And there was an element of that. And like it wasn't actually dangerous, although I should just say, and that's the other thing.
Neither was Morocco.
Exactly.
Neither was Morocco.
And it's just you realize that people's scales, and we were talking about this yesterday, but it's like people's scales of danger are different. Like in Bangkok, I was saying, people think nothing, entire families think nothing about piling onto one motorbike.
Yes.
With like a dad driving and an infant in front and then two infants behind and then a
wife. With just like bungee cords holding everyone in.
If that. I'm like, that is 90% of the vehicles on the road.
Right.
And it's like, that's just the way that it is.
Right.
And do they crash? Yeah.
Yeah.
And do they get in accidents? Yep.
And do they pick up their bikes and get back to work?
Yep.
So.
That's just like that's all just part of it. So like totally had to recalibrate my sense of, okay, this is how this is going to be.
Crossing the street was very hard in Morocco. It was lawless.
Yeah.
It was absolutely lawless.
Yeah.
It was literally like if it was like walking through a game of dodgeball.
Yeah.
It was just like things were coming at every direction. It didn't seem like there was any rules. And like I figured that in a week here, I would start to understand like, oh, this is what I didn't see on day one.
That's right.
Nope, it's lawless.
That's the way that it is.
We haven't figured that out yet.
And you just like you operate at a higher, just like your mind. My sort of safety precaution frequency was just sort of turned up just a little bit.
Makes perfect sense.
So the taxi driver picks us up at the airport. People are like, oh, you know, like in all the guidebooks, it's like people will try and scam you. The taxi drivers especially make sure that they have a meter because if they don't, they'll just like upcharge you.
Of course.
Obviously. So like it was versus Tokyo, which is like it's a noble profession and it's respectful and they wear white driving gloves like it's 1855 London.
This is the other side of the
coin. Side of the Asian coin.
Yep.
So we get to Bangkok. Taxi driver picks us up. The cabs are like bright pink, which is nice.
Oh,
Lively.
Okay.
Lively.
Yeah.
Pick us up. The dude has a long coke nail. Long coke fingernail.
Yep.
Right away.
Is
sniffling and kind of like is clearly on cocaine.
Oh, wow.
Just like evidently and like obviously on cocaine.
Yep.
Which was a trend. Like most of the taxi drivers seem to be on cocaine.
Okay.
So just like, again, different calibrating danger differently.
New rules.
New rules.
Some people stack their babies on the back. Some people are just doing coke while they drive.
It's like you just kind of deal with it all.
You nod your head and say thank you.
Nod your head and say thank you very much. So we gave him the address to the hotel that we were staying in, and he sort of got us there a little bit. Had to ask for directions halfway through from like other street vendors.
Okay.
And eventually we got there, and Maggie and I were just like, wow, this is not Tokyo. Okay, just recalibrating.
Yes.
Everything takes recalibration.
Correct.
That's all. So it was a adventurous ride, simply a commute via taxi from the airport to the hotel. Hotel, gorgeous. Bangkok, stunning, stunning city.
Wow.
Bangkok is all about
–
it's beautiful.
Great.
The economy in Bangkok seems to revolve almost exclusively around street markets.
Okay.
That is like what is – that is how – there seem to be no supermarkets. People just get their produce or their goods just from these myriad street markets.
That was when I was – Marrakesh, too. Marrakesh in – in Morocco. It was one interesting thing I found out was that a large percentage of the population don't have kitchens.
Yeah,
they don't store food.
Interesting.
Everything when you need food, you just
fresh
go,
by the day.
You go just to go to the market. That's where the food is stored.
Exactly. So Thailand feels very much like that.
Okay.
Where it's just like that's what and so not just like pedestrian everyday Bangkokites getting their corn and their whatever their rice there in the morning, which happens, but also tourists like us buying any manner of elephant pants and Thai tourist crap.
And there's no shortage, I'm sure, like just jumping on you guys.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So that was an element of Bangkok, and it was really cool. These malls, Billy.
Yo.
The thing about Bangkok was that these malls – so in addition to the street markets, which was its own sort of fun vibe, there are these giant cruise ship size malls that are ginormous and like clearly the I don't know like where everyone goes to hang out maybe because A, it's so freaking hot. Bangkok is like the hottest city in the world, I think.
Okay.
I mean it was like 95 97 96 uh-huh. It's just like very very hot, so I think people just run for cover to these malls.
No disrespect, I've heard hotter. Hottest city in the world, and you're dropping a 96.
Maybe that's not fair.
Come on,
maybe that's
dog.
Not fair.
Give me a 196. Listening.
Seriously, not as hot as Hades. So it was super hot. So I think it's just like a giant air conditioning.
Sure, that's true of Long Island.
Exactly.
It's like we go to Roosevelt Field when it clears 100. It's like we're just gonna stand next to Sid's jeans. Who cares? We're like just gonna stand next to the fan at Auntie Anne's Pretzels. It's Tuesday. Who cares?
Every 3 hours, we'll maybe buy a pretzel, but we're here for the air conditioning.
Right. Yes. We have an agreement with Auntie Anne. Right.
Auntie Anne's air conditioning and sometimes pretzels.
Right. Let's just take a quick ad break again, and
let's
go back and finish up this
Sounds
Asian
great,
episode
man.
Of the No Joke Podcast.
Perfect. We want to thank Squarespace for being our continued sponsor here in the No Joke Podcast.
Yes.
Squarespace, if for those of you who are not familiar, is an amazing service that creates award-winning, beautiful designer templates for a new website. You can create your beautiful website or an online store using Squarespace, and the design is really sleek, is really fresh. And we use it a lot.
We've mentioned it before, but you can also get domain names.
Yes.
And one domain name that we mentioned in a recent ad, Adam, was one that Rebecca got you.
www....
So if you guys want www.... It's not available.
It's not available. I'm sorry. It was gifted to me as a birthday gift from Rebecca.
But if you do go to Squarespace, you'll find plenty of other great domains available as well.
Yeah. Squarespace also provides 24/7 customer support, which is critical because a website exists 24/7. So should Squarespace.
Correct.
And it does.
Yeah.
It's used by people in the creative field, but not only. But it's really good for creative people or other businesses like musicians or designers or artists that really want sort of a particular visual to their website.
Yeah, so let's hammer home the point. If you are really considering making your own website and you want a little help with a great service and great design, we implore you to use Squarespace.
Yes.
So start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code NOJOKE with no space in the middle, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Once again, start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code NOJOKE, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase.
Pretty sweet deal.
And we're back.
Yes, sir.
We've been talking Asia for the first two acts, and we're going to do the same in the third act.
Great.
Where we left off, we were talking malls.
Yeah, these huge malls in Bangkok,
and
specifically.
And we were talking Auntie Anne's Pretzels.
Yes.
And some of the stores that we in America.
Sid's Jeans that you park at when you just want to get out of the heat.
So is there in their malls, is it the equivalent of ours where there's kiosks in the middle? Is it like the same structural rules?
I mean, it was less kiosks and more just like gorgeous, lavish designer stores. Maggie, one of the designers that she likes to named Aizu Miyake, and I think it's a Japanese designer who makes all these very high – it's like there's a high fashion element.
Cool.
And the second time that we visited Bangkok happened to be Bangkok International Fashion Week.
Oh, wow.
Akin to like the Bryant Park fashion situation
of
in New York. So where are all the Fashion Week events? At the mall.
Of course.
In the mall.
Did Kanye do a show?
No, but the headline designer when we were there, whose show we obviously missed and just saw the amazing parade of fashionistas leaving the show,
yes.
Was this designer named, I think you pronounce her name, Guo Pei, but she is famous for making the crazy dress that Rihanna wore to the Met Gala ball,
okay.
Which is like this super intense, big, maybe like green or yellow dress with a long ass train. Anyway, high fashion.
So Maggie was loving it.
Maggie was loving it. Awesome. And I was too, frankly. I mean, it was like,
of course,
it was like
right.
Being dropped in the middle of people were taking pictures of people who were clearly supermodels and clearly celebrity fashion designers.
Fun.
We had no idea who they were.
You're just out looking for an Auntie Anne's pretzel.
There for Auntie Anne's.
Right.
And we're stumbling at the fashion center.
Cool.
So that was really cool.
So you wake up and go to the mall? Is that how it kind of was that your Bangkok?
No. We woke up and we would like go to the street market.
Okay.
And get some delicious, like yummy, sort of like breakfast Thai food.
Coffee for breakfast? Is that cultural there?
Coffee, of course, big time.
That's
coffee.
That's a global thing.
That's
everyone
everywhere.
Drinks coffee
I think
everywhere.
Everyone's doing coffee. Everyone's okay. Caffeinated forever.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a really awesome place that was called the Jim Thompson House. Jim Thompson was this American World War II veteran who went to Thailand. I think maybe he was stationed there, or I think he went there for during the army. Fell in love with it, never left.
Sure.
Decided to just like set up shop.
That's real.
Was the first kind of like quote unquote famous or like renowned American expat to just like, I love Thailand. Became like the unofficial American ambassador to Thailand.
Right. That makes sense.
It was amazing. Right. Built this gorgeous house for himself in the Thai style right in the middle of the city in Bangkok.
Uh-huh.
His house is now a museum because he was also a silk. He was single-handedly responsible for bringing the silk not trade, but like for popularizing Thai silk.
Huh.
And he made all the costumes for the musical The King and I.
This soldier, in the 50s.
Yes.
This soldier retired and went to silk.
Yes, went into silk, was like an amazing silk tradesman, got famous because the costumes in The King and I were stunning, and people were like, holy shit, what is this Thai silk? And he was like, it's me. So he became famous, became the sort of like flashpoint for all American tourism in Thailand. James Dean and like all these 50s movies, Marilyn Monroe and all these American socialites and movie stars, whenever they would come to Thailand, would stay at Jim Thompson's house.
He's the ambassador.
He's the unofficial ambassador, lives in this gorgeous house, sells silk, hosts dinner parties, is eclectic and hilarious, clearly.
You're never going to hear Colin Powell selling silk.
This is a random story.
I love it.
Exactly.
Go on.
So he's there. He's doing this. The Vietnam War breaks out. It's very controversial, obviously. Jim Thompson, who, again, a war veteran from World War II, is outspoken against the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One day, goes for a walk in the woods, never returns.
Yeah. You just saw where that story was going.
One day, goes for a walk in the woods and never returns.
Man.
Okay, so they were like, so that is just like so the tour is amazing, and it's about how Jim Thompson was this amazing ambassador, and he had all these movie stars over, and look at the silk, and mm-hmm. he built the house as like an architectural wonder, and it's amazing. And then there's just this like secret dark, like this dark
vibe.
Coda.
Right.
This like little dark coda to the end of the tale, which is like, and nowhere, and he disappeared one day, that's it. Anyway, here's the gift shop.
Stop it.
And it's like,
that's what
I mean, it's not exactly like that, but it's like, we're not going to really say too much about it. So Maggie and I went up to afterwards, and like, we did a little reading about it beforehand. And we're
good.
Like, so it was this, I mean, to be honest, like, it was at the CIA. It's like the CIA, like, murdered him because he was, like, out against the war and he knew too much. And, like, it felt like the tour guide didn't even want to verbally say yes. She was just, like, looked around and just, like, subtly nodded. And we're like, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I love that she knows.
Like, she knows. Yeah.
Right.
But that was awesome. And Bangkok is, like, just chock full of amazing things to see and do. And it's really an outrageously vibrant city.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Okay.
It was super cool.
That's Bangkok.
Yeah, Bangkok was sick. We went to the – just to keep it brief, we went to the north of Thailand, which is completely different vibe, not sweaty, crazy city, serene mountains, hills, huge, beautiful state parks with waterfalls.
How do you get there? From
You fly.
You can take a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an hour and a half flight or like a 10-hour bus ride.
Okay. You fly.
So we fly. And totally different vibe, like much more bucolic, much more quote-unquote rural. Chiang Mai itself is a city in and of itself, but again, way slowed down, more relaxed.
Which is nice.
So nice.
You need that.
And the people up there, they don't like Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
It's like – we're like –
it's NorCal, SoCal vibe.
Exactly.
We're just two different vibes.
Exactly.
Right.
Two totally different vibes.
And same kind of like landlines. We all live in the same country.
Yes.
But...
same cultural touchstones, but like one looks down south and it's like, we would never go to that big sweaty city. It is too much traffic, too weird, too crazy.
Yep.
And I think the people in Bangkok look up to the north and it's like, it's too slowed down. Like there's no action.
Right. It's uptown and downtown in Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's just like all the stiffs are up there.
Yes,
all
exactly.
The crazy kids are down there.
That's exactly how it kind of feels. So Chiang Mai was beautiful, went to an elephant sanctuary, walked with, bathed, fed elephants.
Wait, walked with?
Walked.
Bathed.
Fed elephants.
I guess my first question is, when you're bathing an elephant, do you get all up in that ass?
You get up in that ass.
Okay.
Maggie got pretty far up in that ass. I was a little more reluctant. It's just like, you know, there's a sanctuary where these elephants live. There's like a literal separate tribe of people who exclusively have relationships with these elephants. So like elephant whisperers.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So they're there and you kind of have to go an hour even out of Chiang Mai to get to this sort of remote sanctuary zone.
I like it.
It's awesome. Beautiful. I mean, all of this stunningly beautiful. You can't believe the landscape. We took it for granted. Never. It was mind-boggling.
Yeah, Maggie had a rock-solid Instagram.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was posting constantly. Yeah.
Rock-solid.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
So we're there, and you feed them sort of like a mishmash of like mushed-up banana and rice, almost like baby food, basically.
Not peanuts?
Not circus peanuts like you'd think.
Huh.
Not circus peanuts like you'd think.
Go on.
Seems weird. Fake news.
Right.
So we fed them these weird little rice balls. We went through a delightful walk through the woods with them. They're just like these obviously huge, majestic creatures.
You don't like small dogs. How are you handling giant elephants?
I'm chill because elephants emit an incredibly calm, incredibly relaxed energy.
Even though they can sit on you.
They can.
You don't feel the threat quite as much.
No, man. Because, like, honestly, and they, not that they would ever break into a run, but I had the irrational confidence that I could outrun the thing.
I would love to. Yeah. We did not deliver on the crossword puzzle promise,
yeah.
But I would love to know how fast you can run and how fast an elephant can run top speed.
Seriously. Yeah. I'm probably way out of my element, and elephants can probably house me.
I feel confident.
Yeah.
It's an elephant.
Yeah.
They had a slow vibe.
Billy, I mean, they're just the biggest creatures you've ever seen. It just, like, takes a while for them to sit down. They move at that pace.
So you didn't bring a rifle and shoot it in the air just to see?
Just to see if it would scatter.
Yeah.
No.
Sounds like an American thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. How do they like this? So there's a pond that they sort of bathe in after they go for this big walk, and they throw dirt on themselves with their trunks to protect themselves from mosquitoes.
From the sun. Yeah.
So they're all kind of dirty, and we sort of lead them into this pond.
How many people are you with?
This is going to be a group of maybe 8.
Oh,
10.
That's intimate. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
A couple of Uruguayans, a weird Austrian guy, a German fella.
I'm sorry. Oh, Uruguayans.
Yeah, from Uruguay.
Yeah, nice. Uruguayans.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Maggie was the first one to hop in the pond. They give you a little scrub brush and a thing and like a little bowl, like a frisbee basically, that you just splash the elephants with water. Do you scrub their backs?
Yeah.
So you kind of get up in that ass.
Yeah.
I mean, you get up in there.
That's pretty intimate for an elephant.
It is. It is intimate for an elephant.
There was, I just read a story and I don't remember any of the names or the pertinent details, but it's kind of ironic.
Yes.
A famed hunter.
Yes.
He would go from America to somewhere in Africa.
Yes.
Kill animals for sport.
Terrible.
And take big pictures.
Awesome.
He was approaching an elephant to see if its tusks were big enough for him to hunt, and the elephant stepped on him. And he's dead, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like
you see like pictures of him holding like dead antelope, dead tigers, dead lions, and then just to know that he tried to sneak up on an elephant just to see if I can kill him now,
squished.
And the elephant just stepped on.
Stepping on is also like the most. It's not.
I'd love
like
to step on my enemy just to watch him go. Bye now.
Like not even gorged with the tusks. It wasn't like a long, like drawn out battle.
Right. Cartoons. When you get run over by a steamroller, you're a flat pancake.
Yeah.
I'd like to believe that is actually one example. One close example of you actually turning into a flat
human pancake.
Yeah. I think your bones get crushed.
Elephant stomped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that guy's gone.
That guy's gone now, and we're frankly fine with it.
Good job, Animal Kingdom.
With all due respect.
Good job, Animal
That's
Kingdom.
That's how the Animal Kingdom works. Yeah.
So they at least they know who to step on.
You know who to step
they
on.
They left you and Maggie alone.
Yeah,
and they
we
step
were
on the bed,
calm
right?
and peaceful to them. Yeah.
Right.
It does seem humane. And like even in Thailand, it's like, you know, these elephant sanctuaries, there is a bit of an ethical quandary. So like there's many that go out of their way to be like, we don't mistreat the animals, we don't ride them, we're super kind to them. It's like there's a whole political.
But for $5, you can spray paint one.
Exactly. It's like would be on the lower end of the ethical spectrum. But if you're on the high end, for $10, they spray paint you.
That's fun with their nose.
Yeah, with their head. That's fun.
So we only have a few minutes left in the podcast.
Okay, great.
I'm wondering. So you've been in Asia for a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
You're still there.
Yes.
And the allure of America and your friends, I'm sure, is starting to.
Missing you guys like crazy.
Of course.
Obviously.
What are some of, like, I love Naked and Afraid when it's like day 17 and they start losing their minds and they just start saying what they want.
Yeah.
Like, the just like food that they're fantasizing. They just like list through foods that they haven't eaten in 17 days. What were some American things outside of friends, because that's obviously sentimental,
right?
That you just wanted. Like, I remember when I was in Morocco for 3 weeks. As soon as I landed in America, I walked to Wendy's.
Wendy's.
I was just like, give me the dumbest American processed crap.
The price has got to end at 99.
Right.
Something 99.
Right. Right.
Something 99.
Yeah. Whether it's my gas or my cheeseburger, make it end in 99.
Exactly. Right. I would say one of the things, and this is very basic and rudimentary, was just like the home shower. In Tokyo, the bathrooms go above and beyond because – and you're going to be impressed by this, I hope.
Yeah.
The bidet is the default. Mm. The bidet, like technologically souped up toilet, is the default.
Yeah, they get it. There's more holes up there.
Exactly.
Right.
So like – and the bathrooms – and like the toilet is frequently in a separate room from the shower. And the shower is over here and there's no shower curtain and the room is super tiny.
Yeah.
And the floor is also a drain and there's no curtain. And
bathroom habits and routine are important.
So, like, not to be scatological, but I think a familiar home bathroom was something that I found myself craving after a while. Maggie and I spent a couple days in the rainforest in this sort of like eco lodge hut, which was amazing. You cover yourself in a mosquito net and hope for the best.
There's plumbing?
No plumbing, obviously. So the bathroom is like out there over there. Uh-huh. And it's like you just have to like get up in the middle of the night.
And that's a porta potty?
It's like a – it's no.
Do you
it's
flush?
Toilet. You flush. There is plumbing.
Okay.
You flush.
Okay.
So it works okay, but like whatever. So really it was just like the comforts of – not even the home bed situation. It was really like the home bath, home shower.
Did you have any American meals and any attempts at an American meal?
Not really, man. Only because the food in – Thailand was so good.
Yep.
And just like the street food was so plentiful and so bountiful.
And what are you looking at when you get some street food? Like
chicken pad Thai, you're like delicious noodles.
Uh-huh.
In the north in Chiang Mai, there's the regional dish. It's called khao soi, which is like an egg noodle with like coconut curry cream. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just like, it's phenomenal.
Yep.
So good. And like $2.50 maximum.
Yeah, sure.
So we weren't really feasting on any American
meals, just jumped into the culture.
Yeah, we just dove right in, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a lot of fat people?
No.
Yep.
Nope.
Right. That's an American thing, right? For the most part, just common fatness.
Yeah, I think just like casual obesity is our thing. That's what we do. I mean, again, they are eating a lot of – they don't really fuck with beef too much. I mean, it seems like –
That was my experience in Morocco, too.
Yeah.
It was just like there was no overweight people here. Everyone was the same weight everywhere we went.
It's rice. It's vegetables. It's modest meals.
Right. And maybe it's socioeconomic, too, where it's just like we can't afford to overeat.
And frankly, I think it's the heat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's like it's so hot that I mean, like to me at least, heat is a big appetite suppressor.
Agreed.
I'm just like,
no
you're
question.
Just not, you don't want to like gorge really when it's 90 whatever degrees. It's just hard. So I think maybe for that reason as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
When you were there, I'm sure that there was American news headlines that you missed. Did you find yourself reacting differently to them because you weren't necessarily in the same vacuum or media bubble that you are here, where it's kind of an echo chamber? At least you had all the distractions of another country.
Yeah, it was a little. It was a little bit of 50-50 because it's not like we were like without service. So like I had, we were scrolling, doing the scroll. The Twitter scroll was still in full effect.
Healthcare got denied while you were in Asia.
Exactly. So like I was following all that to the letter. It was crazy the time difference being like at 2 a.m. where I was, like the news cycle was just starting here. So like there was that weird element to it.
Yeah. But you were just as tapped in.
Fully tapped. Couldn't escape it. Needed to know everything, dumb thing Sean Spicer said. Needed to know every sort of mini catastrophe that was happening with the EPA. Like have to know it all.
Yep.
Just can't. Moreover, people that we met, I mean what was nice is that people in Thailand don't give a shit.
Right.
Like, we would be like, we're from California. They were like, is that USA?
Right.
We're like, yeah.
Good.
So, like, they didn't know. They didn't care, like, as much. And it's some of the Europeans that we encountered, we would inevitably fall into a conversation about Trump, et cetera. And it was just like, you know, commiseration. So there really is no escaping it.
Yep. That's
there was really no escaping it.
And there's the sad truth.
Yeah.
Folks.
I mean, there are
you
really
can go to a completely new hemisphere.
Yeah.
Things that matter. They're not
still
going anywhere.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it was nice to just like to press pause from being here and maybe as activated and as like in the social media swamp of it.
Yeah.
And as plugged into the hardcore news cycle. But it was nice to like sort of be a little bit detached, but only so detached.
Good.
Only so.
Well, welcome home, Ad.
Thanks, Billy.
You're
good
back.
To see you, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. We did not come up with any sort of better crossword clue.
No, we didn't really.
We are going to rely on you guys to
please
tweet
help us
at NoJokePod. Email us, NoJokePod@gmail.com.
Yes.
Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Please
we
do.
Think it goes a long way. It may not.
It may not, but we
that
like
may
to
have
think
been a ruse.
Yeah.
We may have been lying this whole time.
Yeah.
But for the No Joke Podcast, I am Billy Scafuri.
I'm Adam Lustig.
And as always, we will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.